Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Enbridge Inc. conference call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Adam McKnight, Director of Investor Relations.
Thank you. Good morning, and welcome to Enbridge Inc.'s Financial Strategy Optimization Update call. With me this morning are Al Monaco, President and Chief Executive Officer, John Whelen, Executive Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, Vern Yu, Senior Vice President, Corporate Planning and Chief Development Officer, and Lee Kelln, Vice President, Investor Relations and Enterprise Risk. This call is webcast, and I encourage those listening on the phone lines to view the supporting slides, which are available on our website. A replay and podcast of the call will be available later today, and a transcript will be posted to our website shortly thereafter. We'll take questions from the analyst community first and then invite questions from the media. For everyone's benefit, please wait until the end of the call to queue up for questions. Questions are limited to two per person, then re-enter the queue if you have any additional queries. I'll also remind you that I'll be available after the call for any follow-up questions that you might have. Before we begin, I'd like to point out that we will refer to forward-looking information in connection with Enbridge and the subject matter of today's call. By its nature, this information contains forecasts, assumptions, and expectations about future outcomes. So we remind you, it is subject to the risks and uncertainties affecting every business, including ours. This slide includes a summary of the significant factors and risks that could affect future outcomes for Enbridge, which are also discussed more fully in the news release and our public disclosure filings on both the SEDAR and EDGAR systems. With that, I'll turn the call over to Al Monaco.
Thanks, Adam, and good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us at this early time, and hopefully you've all had a chance to read through the news release that we issued earlier this morning. And in that, we announced that we reached agreement on the drop-down of our Canadian Liquids Pipelines business and some Canadian renewable assets to Enbridge Income Fund for $30.4 billion. This morning, I'll kick things off by recapping our thinking behind our financial strategy optimization, the key terms of the drop-down, and what all of that means for both Enbridge and Enbridge Income Fund Holdings, or ENF as we refer to it. Then John will update you on the funding plan and financial outlook. I'll then come back with the expected timeline to close and a summary. Just a couple of general points, though, before we begin. At our Enbridge Day in October, we raised the profile of cash flow generating capability of our existing assets. As you saw in our news release and as you will see in our presentation today, we've now introduced the concept of available cash flow from operations, or ACFFO, and we'll now be expressing our dividend payout policy in terms of ACFFO. We think this is an important step in ensuring that investors see the embedded growth and cash flow going forward. I should also note that the assessment of the transfer of some or all of our U.S. liquids pipelines to EEP is still underway, so we won't be speaking to that here today. Before we get to the deal itself, let me provide some context, and we're now on slide four. Today we're talking about our financial strategy optimization and how that adds shareholder value. Although the drop-down involves a change to how we hold our liquids assets, our commercial model, strategies, and approach to the business won't change. That includes our number one priority, safety and operational reliability of our systems. We'll continue to operate, manage, and develop our liquids business just as we do today. As you can see from the map, we're a major North American energy infrastructure player with a diversified portfolio of over $77 billion in total assets under management. Our liquids, natural gas, and power franchises are supported by solid fundamentals, and we have strong competitive position in each of those franchises. A key element of our strategy has been to capitalize on the scale and reach of our systems and provide cost-effective access to the best markets. That's generated very good growth, but it's also been critical to our upstream and downstream customers. The majority of our earnings are driven by liquids pipelines, and that growth will continue. At the same time, though, we're focused on further developing our gas business and new platforms, which support extending our industry-leading growth. Moving now to slide five, which outlines what led us to move forward on the financial optimization strategy that we announced in December. The slide summarizes the fundamental value drivers of our business as we see them. First, our existing assets come with strong embedded growth that extends beyond 2018. There's a very high degree of transparency to that growth with the tilted return profile that we've discussed before with investors. Secondly, our industry-leading capital program, which currently sits at $44 billion. The most important part of that is the nature of that capital, which is largely organic. And, of course, that adds the best value, and it's right in the middle of our strategic fairway. Although getting projects done in this environment is challenging, our major projects capability gives us the best opportunity to deliver projects on time and on budget for our customers, and we think that's a competitive advantage. Finally, the strategic positioning of our assets and strong commercial underpinning generates reliable and predictable financial performance in most market conditions. So we spent a lot of time thinking about these value drivers and concluded that they weren't being fully reflected in our valuation relative to the peers. Now, even though it's up to investors to determine the appropriate valuation, it's our job to ensure that we fully surface the embedded value of our growth and business model. Slide 6 translates these drivers into some key metrics from which to measure relative value. Starting at the top left, I mentioned our move to ACFFO as a metric we will be focused on going forward. Here we've plotted out our expected average ACFFO compound growth rate, which is expected to be very robust at about 18% through 2018. John will go through how we'll measure that going forward in a few minutes. Based on that ACFFO outlook and our very healthy expected average annual dividend growth rate of 14 to 16%, as we've previously discussed, you can see that our coverage is at the conservative end of the spectrum. Of course, it's not just about growth. It's equally about the reliability of cash flows. The third chart on the bottom left illustrates very well the predictability of our financial results over an extended period of time and actually going back beyond this to the left. With this strong growth profile and the healthy dividend coverage and our reliable business model, you can see at the bottom right that our valuation has been lagging the peer group. So from this, our view is that we have a good scope to enhance our relative valuation and move more to the left of that chart. And that's really what the financial optimization is all about. Let me be more specific about the benefits of the strategy as outlined on slide 7. Recall there are two parts to the strategy, and both work in tandem. The first is an increase in the dividend payout, which we announced in December. At the time, the payout policy range was increased to 75 to 85% of adjusted earnings. Now, that's going to translate to a revised dividend payout range of 40 to 50% of ACFFO, and John will take you through that as well. The second part is the large-scale drop-down, where we transfer the Canadian Liquids Pipeline businesses to Enbridge Income Fund. Together, these actions will drive out superior value for shareholders to the four items that you see on the chart here. The higher payout range, reduced equity requirements, and the benefits of the drop allow for acceleration of dividend growth, 33% in the first quarter of this year and 14 to 16% average annual expected growth through 2018. This should translate to a lower cost of funding of our existing assets, our $44 billion capital program, and make us at the same time more competitive in pursuing new growth opportunities. At the same time, though, the drop-down transforms the fund through a massive increase in scale, the best liquids pipeline franchise in North America, and a highly visible and secure growth capital program. For the fund, that transformation will drive out expected average annual dividend per share growth of 10% on closing of the transaction and average annual dividend growth of 10% from 2016 through 2019. It's pretty clear we have a significant growth from the large slate of organic projects through 2018. But the power of this transaction is that we'll extend growth beyond 2018 as ENF becomes an even more effective funding vehicle going forward. These sources of growth include the tilted return profiles embedded in the assets, increasing incentive fees from the fund, displaced equity requirements at Enbridge, and our ability to free up capital for redeployment. As many of you have heard us say before, the benefits come down to a pretty simple equation, and that is total annual return of about 17 to 19% when you combine the dividend yield at this point with the dividend growth rate. So we believe this package should be very attractive in any market environment. With that overview, slide 8 summarizes the transaction. Basically, we transfer the Canadian pipelines business, including the mainline and regional oil sand systems, along with some renewable assets to the fund for total consideration of $30.4 billion. That $30.4 billion valuation implies an EV to EBITDA multiple of about 13.8 times. That's based on an expected second half 2015 annualized EBITDA estimate for the assets, and that multiple lines up with what we expressed as a range of possibilities back last December. The valuation, though, reflects, we believe, the uniqueness of the business we're dropping down into the fund. There's nearly $15 billion of commercially secured projects in execution, so the growth is real. In fact, $2 billion of that we've already put into service. A good chunk of the assets, as I said, also comes with upward sloping returns that stem from the commercial terms embedded in the agreements with our shippers. In exchange, Enbridge takes back equity in the fund, and the fund assumes $11.7 billion of existing debt supporting those assets. While the $30.4 billion reflects the lion's share of the value, Enbridge will benefit from two additional sources of cash flow. The first is our current incentive distribution mechanism. The second is new, a temporary performance distribution right, or TPDR. So let's move on to slide 9 now to discuss those. You're all familiar with the fund's existing incentive mechanism. We receive a base fee of about $8 million plus 25% of distributions that exceed the threshold of 1.295 per unit. So that really doesn't change. What's new is this performance distribution right, or TPDR. You can see the details on the slide, but basically we'll receive additional equity in the fund based on 33% of distributable cash above the same 1.295 per unit through 2020. Distributions are going to be paid in kind, and they convert to cash-paying units 4 years after the year of issuance. So let me just spend a moment on why this new incentive distribution right is part of this transaction. As I referred to earlier, the assets we're transferring are unique in that they come with substantial and transparent built-in growth that generates increasing cash flow. Part of that is this upward sloping return profile that's embedded in the assets. For Enbridge, the TPDR essentially captures additional value from the positive outlook we see for the liquids business going forward. And of course, that will be a good outcome for the income fund and ENF because it will mean the assets are growing and so is the cash flow. So in a nutshell, this feature really bridges what the fund can accommodate today with the future cash flows that will be generated from the assets. Now I'm going to spend a few minutes on how this drop will transform the fund and by extension, ENF. So now we're on to slide 10. It's very clear how that's going to happen when you look at the map here. We're adding large scale and scope to the fund's business. Once the $30 billion plus transfer is complete, the income fund will have the largest asset base among high payout Canadian energy infrastructure companies. And with that, we believe the highest quality liquids business in terms of the underlying commercial model and the reliability of cash flows. Just by reference, that includes the Canadian portion of our extensive liquids pipelines network, perhaps one of the most strategic assets in North America on the energy front. The main line moved a record 2.2 million barrels per day across the border last year, and that's over 50% of the daily Canadian crude into the U.S. And then there's the regional oil sands system, which connects 8 major oil sands developments, and actually 2 more coming on stream next year, to the key market hubs of Edmonton and Hardisty, and then on to our main line. These businesses have a lot of runway in front of them as well in terms of new development and expansion potential going forward. Slide 11 lists out the projects in execution to give you more transparency into this and the in-service date timing we expect. It's really these projects that provide the low-risk cash flow growth to support the significant rising dividends for ENF through 2019 that I talked about earlier. On to slide 12 and what this means for ENF, which is the public equity issuing vehicle that will initially own about 10% of the fund and growing over time as it makes further investments in the fund. Historically, the payout policy of ENF has been managed to provide a smooth 1% embedded growth rate in distributions, and that's originally how it was designed. That 1% growth has been supplemented in most years, though, by organic opportunities in the assets or periodic drop-downs. We think that's generated good returns for ENF shareholders, but that approach has been less transparent from an investor's perspective. This transaction provides an explicit plan and a large inventory of assets for ENF to digest every year. We expect this to provide ENF shareholders with dependable dividend growth of about 10%, as we said, immediately upon closing of the deal, and then each year thereafter from 16 to 19. That growth comes about from the increasing investment in the fund, but also participation in that upward tilted cash flow stream from the new assets. So clearly a great outcome for ENF shareholders. Slide 13 brings this all together in one spot, so I'm not going to repeat every point that you see here, but in essence what the slide does is capture the magnitude of the change in ENF from where it is today across a number of key attributes. And it's really this transformation that's generating the win-win we've been talking about since we announced the transaction last December. It's great for ENF shareholders for all the reasons we've discussed, and it adds value to Enbridge in that we've created a strong vehicle to support our strategies and value proposition. And of course, we benefit from ENF's success through an improvement in their valuation and an effective source of funding for Enbridge. I'm now going to pass the call over to John to discuss the funding plan and the financial outlook in more detail.
Okay, thanks, Al, and good morning, everyone. I'm on slide 14 now. One of the very compelling aspects of this transaction is the financing flexibility that it will provide going forward. The plan is for ENF to issue equity in manageable bites each year when market windows are attractive to finance a growing interest in our industry-leading infrastructure businesses owned by the fund. We're currently planning to raise in the range of $600 to $800 million of equity per year at ENF over the next 3 to 4 years, around $3 billion in total. But we'll tailor the size of those offerings to meet market demand. Enbridge will co-invest with ENF as required, and importantly has committed as part of this transaction to provide an equity funding backstop for the very large liquids pipelines growth program that the fund will acquire along with the transferred assets. As ENF raises new capital, we would expect Enbridge's interest in the fund to decline from a little over 90% immediately post this drop-down to around 80% by 2018, all other things equal. At the same time, ENF's public market capitalization and trading liquidity will grow significantly as it raises new equity, which when combined with its low-risk business model and expected dividend growth rate of close to 10% should make it a very attractive investment proposition for both retail and institutional investors and an increasingly effective vehicle through which Enbridge can raise low-cost equity capital. The stronger ENF's valuation, the more it will serve to displace equity funding requirements at Enbridge Inc., freeing up capital for investment in new projects and enhancing Enbridge's ability to extend cash flow and dividend growth beyond 2018. Moving on to the debt side of the equation and to slide 15, you will have seen in the news release that on closing in September, the fund will assume about $11.7 billion worth of debt when it acquires Enbridge Pipelines, Inc. and Enbridge Athabasca. A little over $3 billion of this amount represents outstanding medium and long-term notes issued by Enbridge Pipelines, Inc. in the Canadian public market. About $2 billion is commercial paper to be issued by Enbridge Pipelines and expected to be outstanding at the time of closing. There's also about $400 million of project debt financing for the Canadian portion of the Southern Lights Diluent Program that will come across as part of this transaction. The balance of $6.1 billion, are intercompany loans from Enbridge Inc. that will remain in place post-closing. The bulk of these loans, a little over $4 billion, were advanced to fund regional oil sands projects and represent senior claims on all of the assets of Enbridge Pipelines Athabasca, which has no other external debt. At the time we announced our intention to make a drop-down proposal to the fund, we also talked about a potential debt exchange. We spent a lot of time over the last few months assessing the merits of various structures to address potential concerns with respect to structural subordination. After considering feedback from investors, financial advisors, and the rating agencies, we have determined not to offer such an exchange. The rating agencies are fully up to speed on this transaction, and we do expect them to issue their reports shortly. Moving along now to slide 16, which shows our outlook for adjusted EPS. Based on our long-range plan, we still expect an average annual adjusted EPS growth rate of 10 to 12% over our planning horizon. This takes into account the impact of this drop-down transaction, which we now expect to be approximately 2% accretive on average from 2015 to 2018. The expected accretion reflects the benefit of growing incentive fees to Enbridge and reduced equity funding requirements of approximately $3 billion. The external equity capital expected to be raised by ENF through 2018. The EPS accretion estimate has clearly changed from our original expectation of 10%, so let me address that. Our original estimate reflected our planning assumptions and expectations at the time, which contemplated that preference units would form part of the consideration paid by the fund to Enbridge for the assets transferred in this transaction. However, as we worked through the finalization of the transaction details, including the terms of the equity taken back, we determined that a preferred investment was not the best structure for this transaction. Given the magnitude of Enbridge's ownership in the fund, we concluded that a common unit investment would align us more closely with the public investors in the vehicle, and that the accounting treatment of a structure with common units would better reflect this alignment. So, as a result, the GAAP EPS impact is less than we had originally anticipated, based on the original structure design. Importantly, the revised structure does not change the cash flow we will derive from our ongoing investment in the fund. And speaking of cash flow, let's now turn to slide 17. As Al mentioned earlier, we will be introducing supplementary cash flow metrics to our regular reporting as a means to better convey the value that we believe is created through this transaction in combination with the increase in the dividend payout that we announced at the end of last year. We looked at a number of potential metrics and concluded that available cash from operations, or ACFFO, is the most appropriate measure for Enbridge at this time. It is a consolidated portrayal that is used by a number of our peers and can be readily derived from Enbridge Inc.'s consolidated cash flow statement with a little additional disclosure on maintenance capital, which we will be providing going forward. The calculation methodology is illustrated on the slide using our 2014 actual results, which produces an ACFFO metric of $3.02 per share. From this base in 2014, we expect that ACFFO will grow at a very attractive compounded rate of about 18% per year through 2018, providing ample support for ongoing dividend increases. This compound growth rate will look a little different than what we showed you at Enbridge Days last fall. There are a few reasons for that. Firstly, this number is calculated off a 2014 base year, whereas our prior calculations used 2013 as the base. Secondly, the measure we showed you last year actually included a component of enhancement capital in our consolidated maintenance capital numbers. We have standardized approach to defining maintenance capital to align it with that used by our publicly traded sponsors' vehicles and our peers, and we'll use this approach going forward. Finally, the calculation approach has changed a little. To the extent we have described cash flow growth in the past, we have focused on a deconsolidated approach, in effect picking up distributions from our sponsored vehicles and adding those distributions to funds from operations delivered by the rest of our businesses. This new metric is more focused on consolidated cash flow across all of our businesses, and we think this is the more appropriate approach given that post this transaction, we do expect to continue to hold a very large interest in the fund for the foreseeable future. So ACFFO, as described on this slide, will be the metric we will use to depict Enbridge's available cash flow going forward. And strong cash flow, however measured, will continue to support dividend growth. And now turning to slide 18, you can see that after a 33% bump in our dividend earlier this year, we continue to be very well positioned for further increases. Accelerating ACFFO, driven by the ongoing execution of our $44 billion capital program, and growing returns on our base business should allow us to grow dividends at a compound average annual rate of between 14 and 16%, through 2018. Al mentioned earlier that our dividend payout policy, expressed as a percentage of ACFFO, translates to a range of 40 to 50%. We expect that the dividend growth profile set out on this slide should fall quite nicely within this payout range. At these payout levels, our cash flow coverage of dividends is expected to be very strong, both in absolute terms and relative to many of our peers, which leaves us with potential flexibility to further boost the dividend payout beyond 2018, depending on the size and nature of our investment opportunities at that time. Looking a little farther forward, one of the big benefits that we see with the financial optimization strategy that we're now implementing is the way in which it supports dividend growth over the long term. The ability to cost-effectively raise equity capital at ENF to fund asset growth should continue to displace equity capital requirements at Enbridge Inc., enhance returns on capital invested through the fund via growing incentive distributions, and provide flexibility over the long term to monetize investments in the fund and redeploy capital into new growth opportunities, all of which, when combined with growing embedded returns in our base business, should enable us to extend our attractive dividend growth rate well beyond our current planning horizon. With that, I'll turn it back to Al to wrap up.
Okay, thanks, John. So now we're on to slide 19, which is really just a reminder of the timeline for this transaction. As you can see here, it's been a lengthy process to get to this point, but with this agreement in place, the bulk of the heavy lifting has now been done, but there are a few steps here remaining to close the transaction. The transfer is subject to closing conditions and some regulatory approvals, and the ENF shareholder vote, which is scheduled for late August. We expect the closing would follow shortly thereafter. In summary then, on slide 20, this last slide illustrates the optimization plan is really a win-win for both shareholders of Enbridge and ENF. For Enbridge, moving the Canadian Liquids Pipelines assets down to the fund doesn't change the fact that it remains our core business. We'll maintain a very significant economic interest in this business, continue to operate it, and will manage its strategic development. So Enbridge will look fundamentally the same, and our reliable business model that has served us well and our investors well will remain intact. We've talked about the 33% dividend bump on March 1, and we've upped our dividend growth rate outlook to 14 to 16%, at least through 2018. And equally important in all of this is that we've established the fund as a low-cost funding vehicle that will position us well to extend our industry-leading growth beyond 2018. Moving to the right-hand side of the slide, the benefits to ENF and the fund are clear. Simply put, the scale and quality of Enbridge's crown jewel liquids pipelines assets transforms ENF into a premier energy infrastructure company. The fund will still be a high payout vehicle focusing on providing a large component of its return in the form of cash. And it will have a very visible growth slate in cash available for distribution through the large secured program, plus significant development opportunities going forward. The magnitude of the growth should be the highest among its Canadian peers, with dividend growth of about 10% at least through 2019. We think that all makes for a pretty appealing story for both Enbridge and the fund and should support premium valuations and continued success for both entities. I'd like to remind everybody before I close off that ENF and fund management and investor relations are available to answer any questions you may have after our call today. But for now, we're going to turn it back to the operator for questions. Operator?
We will now take questions from the analyst community. For everyone's benefit, please limit yourself to two questions per person and return to the queue for additional lines of questioning. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touch tone phone. Standing by for questions. And our first question comes from Sharon Liu from Wells Fargo. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I was wondering maybe if you can address the merits of executing one large drop versus a series of transactions that was originally contemplated and, you know, the implications to structure the transaction with EAP similarly with one drop and with that TBDR feature.
Okay. Well, you know, effectively, you can think of it as just about the same thing as a sequential drop. And the reason for that is this. Although the assets are coming down to the fund in what we've referred to as, I guess, one fell swoop, and you've seen the size of the transaction, the sequential part of it is actually that ENF invests in the fund annually, as John has said, to the tune of about $600 to $800 million in equity. So what the large drop does is provide clarity that you know, we're moving forward with sequential drop downs, and that I think from a governance point of view it makes it a little simpler in that the valuation really from here on is going to be determined by the equity issuances done by ENF. So I think you can think of it as one large drop down, but from ENF's point of view, there's sequential investments that come about year after year. Now, with respect to EAP, which I think was the second part of your question, as we said earlier, at this point, we're still evaluating the possibilities there. So I would say at this point, it's still an open question as to which structure would prevail. But as we said, we're still in the process of looking at that. So more to come on that, we're hoping, within the next quarter or two.
Okay. And I guess similarly with the TBDR feature, that's also an item potentially for ETH as well?
You know, that's, once again, in the category of to be determined at this point. We're still working through the process, and you know, whatever structure we determine will apply then. So I think it's way too early to speculate on the structure of a possible EAP transaction.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Robert Catellier from GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, and congratulations on achieving this important milestone and this enormous undertaking.
Thank you.
I've got a couple questions. I'm going to start with debt, and then I'll have one on the on capital allocation. You know, your slides are clear about the motivation on the equity side and, you know, trying to move to the left on the sort of relative valuation on your payout metrics, et cetera. But, you know, there's a balancing mechanism there with the cost of debt, and your peer group in particular has lower debt metrics. And so I want to understand how you're going to go about balancing those seemingly competing interests. So, you know, at what point does the increase or possible increase in the cost of debt outweigh the benefits that go along with a higher payout ratio, and how are you going to manage that whole process?
Well, I think that's a very good question. The answer is it's a balancing act, but our primary goal, Robert, is to assure that we maintain very strong debt access, debt capacity, and very strong credit ratings through the piece. So our goal will be to balance that at the end of the day. Obviously, we assessed the overall impact of the transaction on our overall weighted average cost of capital, and we believe that this will lower it, making us more competitive going forward. But we are very conscious of the support that we get from our debt investors, and we were quite careful, actually, in designing this to try to make it as credit neutral as we possibly can. And so we're not looking to, if you will, lever up the organization as a result of the higher payout. In fact, our design models ensured that we'd rebalance the capital structure. And that, in part, is what we like about this structure, because we can bring additional equity in from other sources, in this case the ENF, to rebalance the structure. But the answer is we're very conscious of both sides of the equation, have been in the design of this transaction, and will be going forward.
I think just to add on to what John is saying, and by the way, it's a great point on the balance here, Robert. You know, if you look at the payout policy that we have, and I think we expressed this as well at Enbridge Day and since then, I think if you look at where we sit on the payout scheme relative to the rest of the peer group, it's relatively conservative. And part of that relates to what you're pointing out around the balance that we're taking here. And obviously, we're still in very high execution mode for capital projects, and that means capital funding that goes with it. So we've managed the payout. Even though we increased our dividend considerably, we tried to manage the payout to retain enough capital to ensure that there's a very, very high degree of execution around the capital program. Hopefully that helps on your first part of your question.
Yeah, it does, actually. And then the second part is, you know, it looks like you're preparing for that post-2018 growth phase, and I wonder if you can give any more characterization or color on how you might go about deploying that capital and what areas of the value chain appear most attractive. If maybe you can just compare North American investments with maybe international investments down the road.
Okay, another good observation. First of all, generally on the capital allocation question, this is something that we face, you know, frequently in terms of deciding where to put the capital. And I think you're right to point out, as we move through this period up to 2018 and we have this source of funding, that allocation decision is going to be even more important. But I don't think we're going to change our approach to this at all, Robert. And basically that approach is we're going to see what opportunities are in front of us at the time and really determine whether or not they fit the value proposition that we have. And basically that is if we can get very good return projects and have the commercial underpinning that's relatively low in risk, then we're adding value. And we're not going to know that at this point until we run up against those opportunities. But it's really a choice between more capital deployment into acquisitions or growth opportunities versus potentially ramping up the dividend if those opportunities don't meet the criteria. Specifically, certainly I think that the liquids business will continue to grow. We've often said in the past that there will be a limit to that. However, we continue to get surprised, so we're going to continue to work the liquid side of the opportunities. But certainly on the gas side, we're certainly big fans of the gas business going forward longer term. Power as well, so I would include electricity transmission as well as power generation. With respect to international, what we have seen in the last 5 or 6 years is the returns there, at least on a risk-adjusted basis, haven't been as favorable to what we've seen in North America. So having said that, though, we do have a couple of countries that we're focused on and would certainly look at an opportunity there if it fit the criteria. Long answer, but I think you've raised an important question on capital allocation.
That helps a lot. And if you could just indulge one more question. I noticed on slide 15 there's the commercial paper is expected to be migrated down to EPI over time. And I'm wondering what the process to migrate that down there is, and whether or not Enbridge Inc. is still backstopping that commercial paper program. Thank you.
Robert, what will happen is that, quite frankly, you'll see repayment of paper. There's intercompany loans, in part, being funded by commercial paper at Enbridge Inc., being on lent down to Enbridge Pipelines. Enbridge Pipelines, now that it has really got the bulk of the growth and in this new structure, now that it will be owned by the fund, will beef up its commercial paper program quite significantly. It'll start to raise commercial paper in the market in its own right, repay those intercompany loans going forward. So that's the migration process.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Robert Kwan from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Just on the 18% ACFFO CAGR, recognizing it's apples to oranges partly in the calculation, but also dropping off the 2013 year on the 25% that you gave in Investor Day, can you just talk about, though, how the deck from 14 to 18 compares to the plan when you look at where you were versus pro forma?
It's John, Robert. I think I know what you're getting at. You know, the overall CAGR in terms of the impact to project capture over that time period is relatively modest at the end of the day. There's a very modest uplift if that's what you're getting at the end of the day in terms of pro forma. But otherwise, these numbers are driven straight off of our 2014 long range plan. With some adjusted to our liquids pipeline forecast for work that was done as part of this drop-down transaction.
Maybe I'll try a different way as well to supplement, Robert. You know, if you look at where we were at Enbridge Day and where we are today with this representation, there's really no change in the fundamental outlook in terms of the cash flow outlook. So John's referred to a couple things that have changed, but essentially there's been no sort of deterioration in the outlook from a cash flow perspective. So it's all related to how we're characterizing this. And as John pointed out, this lines up very well with the rest of the peers and with our sponsored vehicle definition, particularly for maintenance capital.
Great. Okay, so just to be clear, the 25 to 18 is largely just dropping the 2013 year off, and it sounds like there's some modest accretion to the growth rate as part of the transaction?
Yeah, and the methodology changes that I mentioned during the prior part of the call, Robert.
Right.
So change in maintenance capital and change in calculation approach to be consistent with this consolidated approach.
Okay, and I guess just another kind of part about the components of the 18% CAGR. So when you look at the TPDR, it's going to be non-cash distribution. So to be clear, you are excluding or as whatever TPDR will end up in net income, that's being reversed out as part of the cash flow calculations, or if I put it differently, when the TPDR actually converts and starts paying cash, all things being equal, you'll see a jump in cash flow at the Enbridge Inc. level. Is that correct?
You've got it.
Yeah, and that's the key point here, because the TPDR start to convert 4 years out. So that was part of the rationale for our commentary around the extension of the cash flow growth beyond 2018, which this sets us up well to do.
Oh, that's great. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Linda Esergalis from TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. With respect to your maintenance capital, can you give us an update under the new definition what it will trend at the Enbridge level under the new ACFFO definition, and then what it will be at Enbridge Income Fund?
This is a pretty good indicative level, I think, for what our forecast would show. Linda, one of the things we've talked about is we're getting a stabilization in that number going forward. So this is relatively well aligned with what we see going through it forward through the plan cycle.
And this is a consolidated look. So I think Linda was asking about the breakdown for the fund. I'm not sure if we have that or if it's any different materially from where.
It won't be materially different. It'll reflect its economic interest.
Maybe what we're saying, the run rate's about $1 billion, Linda.
At both levels. So there's not a material difference at the Enbridge level.
At the Enbridge Income Fund level.
Yeah, I think the translation is Enbridge would own over 90%, so we would pick up the entire amount, and then the Income Fund would pick up whatever translates down.
And then does that $1 billion run rate include the maintenance capital associated with the new assets coming on stream?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Okay, that's helpful. And in your modeling, just as a follow-up question, what would be the initial accretion to Enbridge Income Fund, and what would be the associated ACFFO growth range of possibilities, I guess, depending on...
At the holding company, Linda, it's going to be roughly that 10% because it's paying out, it's virtually getting all of its distributions from the fund, and then on average over time is paying those out to investors. So it'll be up and down to some degree over time, but it's been smooth to generate, or the dividend itself has been smooth to generate that steady 10% growth rate. But basically all of the cash coming up, less tax that's applied at the holding company level, will then get passed on to investors, again with some smoothing, because it's not perfectly smooth.
Okay, so no change in payout ratio at the hold co level, and at the op co level, what's the cash flow growth rate?
The cash flow growth rate is something in the order of 6 or 7%. And the other benefits arise through taxes as they are applied and paid up to the holdco that gets you up to that somewhat higher rate.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Rob Hope from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. And actually, maybe just a follow-up on those tax questions. Could you provide an outlook for what the tax would be at the fund level and the holding level for the next few years?
Yeah, I think we'll do that one offline, Robert. I don't have all that detail right in front of me.
Sure. And then maybe just broader. On the development opportunities, you note that the liquid pipelines, the fund would have a right of first, a right to participate in the projects in its catchment area, but what about power opportunities as well as some midstream opportunities that could be intertwined with your Alliance pipeline?
Hi, Rob. It's Vern. I think the way to look at it is unless the new opportunity materially impacts the existing assets within the fund, Enbridge will have the flexibility of doing the project at Enbridge or the fund, depending on where it makes the most sense from a cost of capital perspective.
So, for example, you could do a discrete renewable project at Enbridge Inc. and then drop it down to the fund at a later time?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. And our next question comes from Dario Nemargia from Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, it's Matthew Ackman. Hi, good morning. Can I just ask first, I guess, about the TPDR, and just to confirm, that expires in 5 years, right?
That's correct.
So that's not a permanent increase in the incentive fee percentage.
So, Matthew, it's Vern. It expires either at the later of the in-service of Line 3 or 2020.
Okay.
And it's really designed so the income, so Enbridge gets appropriate value for primarily Line 3, and when the cash from Line 3 starts generating, the TPDR turns into a cash pay instrument.
Okay, perfect. That's what I thought. Can I just clarify I don't know if you guys can answer this, the Enbridge Income Fund dividend plans, are we to understand that there will be a 10% dividend increase on closing of the deal and then another one next year sometime? And if so, what's sort of the timing of the annual dividend change at Enbridge Income Fund?
I think, Matthew, it's John, right, on closing is right. And then annual timing will typically drive, as it often does, as it always does at Enbridge, off of our budget cycle. So you would see it early in the year, usually with the first distribution in the new year following the budget. So on a monthly basis, it would be that one that would be payable in January. That's obviously subject to performance and the directors declaring the dividend or approving the dividend and so on.
But the base plan effectively has Enbridge Income Fund raising the dividend by like 21% by the start of next year, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
You got it. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And just a last question. I don't know if you guys have thought about this, but I know the payout guidance will effectively change to free cash flow, but will you still provide earnings per share guidance, or is that going to go by the wayside?
No, at this time, we believe what we'll be doing is we're providing earnings per share reporting. Our guidance will be shifting to more of a focus on ACFFO, Matthew, but we will also be tracking consolidated adjusted EPS.
Okay. Thanks, John. Okay, those are my questions. Thanks, guys.
Okay, thanks, Matthew.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Harry Mateer from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my questions. This is Greg Price sitting in for Harry. You've touched on the debt side of things a couple of times. I was just wondering, in terms of credit ratings, you wanted to maintain as strong as possible. Do you have any particular target, or are you just looking at investment grade overall? Just wondering if you had any comments on that.
I think strong investment grade for the group overall is certainly what we'd like to see. We've got lots of growth yet to fund, and so we're very conscious of that going forward.
Okay, thank you. And then in terms of the debt exchange, opting away from that, you mentioned structural subordination as one of the considerations. Was there anything else the team looked at in that decision?
Well, I think we were looking at a debt exchange and had been working with financial advisors and others as potentially a means to alleviate concerns around structural subordination. But as we worked through it with investors and with advisors and with the agencies themselves, it became apparent to us that it wasn't going to be serve as a particularly strong mitigant at the end of the day, and in our view wouldn't have been a credit positive outcome or design feature, and so that's why we pulled back from it.
Okay, great. Thank you, guys. That's it for me.
Thank you. At this time, we would like to invite members of the media to join the queue for questions. Please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone to ask a question. And our last analyst question comes from Pasquale Lepence from Attent. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. It's just a follow-up on the previous question. I guess it was partially answered, but I mean, what other? I just want to understand better, you know, what are the those considerations? Because to me, I mean, to me, it's not good from a bondholder perspective to have a loan. So I guess the feedback from the investor was probably that they would have preferred, you know, that the debt would follow the asset. So I would just like you to expand a little bit more on those considerations and why you did not completed or offer this debt exchange. Thank you.
Sure. Well, we certainly looked at that and compared various analytical constructs and features to address, if you will, the structural subordination that happens when you move debt down. And I should point out that the structural subordination associated with this transaction, at the end of the day, is relatively modest. Enbridge Pipelines Inc., where the bulk of the debt is located, was always raising debt capital on its own accord, and so the bondholders of the parent were always structurally subordinated to that debt sitting at Enbridge Pipelines. However, there was some incremental structural subordination associated with that. I think what we found in looking at the getting perspectives back from rating agencies and others, that they really, quite frankly, saw it as something of a negative to the overall credit framework of the group, and both to the holders of Enbridge Inc., and the holders of the fund. So it didn't seem to make an awful lot of sense to us to proceed with something that would have resulted potentially in a weaker credit rating on both sides, and that's why we decided to not proceed with it.
Hey, thank you. And our next question comes from Jim Poulsen from Bloomberg News. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. One of the things we've seen in the last 12 months or so is that IDRs can become effectively a capital burden on the income side, at least in the U.S. on the MLPs. When you structured this transaction, was that something you took into consideration? Is there something in this deal that helps the fund with that?
Yeah, that's a very good observation. In fact, if you go back, probably a year, 18 months ago, EEP, which is the U.S. MLP that we have as a sponsor vehicle, was at a very high level of splits, hitting that 50% IDR effectively. And we concluded that we needed to revise that structure back down to 25%, and that would be consistent with the income fund. The other part of the incentive mechanism that we were talking about here is the TPDR, which, as I said, is another form of incentive, but that's exactly why we structured it to be non-cash in the first few years here, just to ensure that we could line up the incentive with the cash that's actually going to come out of the asset. So I think you're right to raise it, and it was a consideration in how we structured the deal for sure. But at the end of the day, we feel pretty strongly that with these incentives in place, it's certainly good for Enbridge to address the bridge that needed to be built between what the fund could pay and the value for Enbridge, and we think it did that.
But isn't that a sort of a balloon payment in what you were talking 4 years, so 2020 or 2021?
Yeah, it's not a balloon payment, actually. What happens is we issue these new securities that the dividends of which are paid in kind annually, and then they start redeeming or, I guess, paying, converting into cash in successive years. So it's not a balloon. It starts to pay the distribution or dividend once the cash starts coming in those years.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Jeff Lewis from the Globe and Mail. Please go ahead.
Hi, just a quick question in terms of capital allocation post-2018. Are there specific opportunities you're looking at in the midstream or the gas side in British Columbia now that there's been some movement on those big export projects? Thanks.
Hi, Jeff. Yeah, for sure. The midstream business in Canada is something that, as you may recall, we have an interest in pursuing. We've done a couple of things, one with Cabin, one with the Peace River Arch, and as well we have quite a significant position through Aux Sable and Alliance. The fundamentals around BC, we believe, are very strong long-term. You know, the gas prices at this point in time are problematic, but longer term, we feel that the Canadian midstream space certainly needs a lot of development in terms of infrastructure to support the drilling that's going to happen there over time. So a great area, we think, for future development, and certainly that'll be one of the opportunities for deployment as we move forward with this new source of funding.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I would now like to turn the call back to Adam McKnight for any closing remarks.
Thank you. We have no further comments at this time, but I'd like to remind you that Lee and I will be available for any follow-up questions you might have after the call, as will the ENF and fund management team and IR. Thank you, and that concludes our call.
Thank you. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.